Hey everybody, Shane here to tell you about my friends at Music Record Shop. Go check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the heart of the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. They've got new music every Friday, new music happy hour, new records this Friday from David Gilmour, Battles, Uncle Acid, Robert DeLong, All Them Witches, and reissues of Fish. Also, check them out Saturday, September 19th, live in-store performance from The Company She Keeps. Follow them online, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, musicrecordshop.com.
Hi, I'm Charlie Brumley.
I'm John Finnegoni, and you're listening to the Rock
Paper Podcast.
Yeah, this is Rock Paper Podcast with Shane and his guests. You will listen to what he says.
Everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, episode 116. Hanging out with two guys of the Educated Guess.
Two guys. Charlie Brumley and John Finnegoni.
Yeah. Woo! Oh, yeah. Here he comes.
What do you want?
Emerging from the restroom.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. This has been a while in the making.
It has. We've had a lot of scheduling to navigate. Yeah.
Here he is, everybody, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey. Oh yeah.
Yes,
had to get the party.
Had to get a couple of these special edition camouflage beer bush beers. They're not quite camouflage. The box was camouflage.
This episode of the Rock Paper Podcast is brought to you by Bush Camo Cans.
Yeah. In case you weren't going to go do some deer hunting in downtown St. Louis.
You got to drink a Bush beer and go home and meet your wife.
You got to read the slogan, the clear and bright as mountain air.
It is.
Clear and bright as mountain air.
Well, actually, there's something on here.
How would you read that, Tony? Clear and bright as mountain air.
Clear and bright as mountain air.
There you go.
Even though, my smoky voice would indicate that I don't breathe clear and bright air all the time, you know? I love the bottom part, though. Since its introduction at Busch Bavarian in 1955, Busch and the great outdoors have always gone together. Whether you're an avid hunter or just enjoy the outdoors, make sure you are filling your cooler with ice-cold Busch beer. Don't forget your orange. I like that. It's camo orange. This year, these camo cans are considerably different. Yeah. They call them camo cans, but it's basically just Hunter Orange can this time.
Right.
I don't like it.
But it goes so well with guns. I mean, we need people with guns drinking this beer together. You know, put them all in one spot and just, let them have a good time.
Exactly. Right. Drink 18 of these, handle your firearm. They drive home and presumably beat your wife.
Yeah. That's... Sorry, Brian.
Yeah. Okay. Brian. Oh yeah, our drummer works for AB, which is funny. Maybe one of his friends in the marketing team though would have listened to my golden voice, and maybe they'll put me on a commercial though.
Yeah.
Because, hey, I'm unemployed, podcast world. I need need help. So I'm drinking these Bush Camo cans.
Proud sponsor.
Yeah, proud non-sponsor. Actually, we paid for the Bush. Like, we're kind of a sponsor of Bush right now. Man, Rock Paper is really growing, man.
Yeah.
Sponsoring a beer company.
Yeah, that's how we roll.
It literally was 45 seconds and I derailed everything, didn't I?
Oh, hey, it happens, man.
We're going to edit it so it starts right now.
No, that was gold.
Hey, everybody, I'm Charlie Brumley. This is my buddy John Benigoni. We're educated guests.
Just talking about some music, Bush beers. I guess? Should we talk about music? Or?
Oh, yeah, we can.
We doing music?
Yeah, we're in a band.
Yeah.
The Educated Guests LLC.
So let's tell the story from the beginning. So in 1987, I was born.
I was born in 88.
Okay.
Next year.
Okay. So in 88, I would have been like 1 year old.
Yeah. You're about 9 months older than me.
Yeah, I think so.
So we started like I couldn't even, fully control my neck movement and stuff like that yet. I was years away from walking.
I didn't have any finger capacity for piano, no facility or anything. Even the artwork I drew, looked like some little kid made it. It was terrible. Right.
Hey, is this the first podcast where there's a dog barking in the background? That's funny. As soon as we started, a fucking dog comes outside. He's like, hey, I want to be a podcast too! Ruff, ruff, ruff! He had a rough day, Prick dog. Yeah.
Keep it down.
Yeah. Get a job, dog. In fact, if you find one, tell me where you got one, because I'm still looking.
You derailed that again. We got to start right now.
Hi,
I'm Charlie Brumley. This is my buddy John Benigoni.
I am John Benigoni. And hosting us is Shane Presley. Joining us tonight.
Yes.
I just suddenly hijacked the podcast for myself.
This podcast is sponsoring Bush Beer.
Yeah. The only podcast with a bush.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. With a bush. That's good. I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so around 1991, we recorded our first album. I would have been 2.5.
Yeah, I would have been...
3 and some change.
Three and some change. 3 and a quarter.
Wow, yeah. And, Mark Rubin from Def Jam was working with us. And he was like, I've been working with these Beastie Boys. And, they're about to give me their, fourth or fifth full-length album.
He kept
album.
Throwing this crazy idea at us about a sandwich. It was like the something sandwich.
Well, we put pastrami on rye and with sauerkraut and Thousand Island dressing and Swiss cheese.
It's what do you want to call it? I don't know. It was weird.
And I remember that we were in the studio one day, and I was like, fuck it, Mark. Just call it the Reuben. This is a Reuben sandwich.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, you were there too, Shane. Yeah, it's not like we just met 2 years ago.
Right.
We forgot that we had met each other in 91 in the Def Jam Studios in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's the best thing Mark Rubin has ever given the world.
Exactly. The sandwich. And Seinfeld based that entire cafe scene that they do around his sandwich.
That's true. So that was 91, right?
That was 91. By 94, we all had a crazy coke and heroin addiction. That would have been, 94, I said, so I would have been 6 by then. Mm-hmm. Man, times went fast.
They moved quick, yeah.
And Charlie kind of had his Bible-y phase between 97 and 99. And
I got out of that.
Yeah, but then I was like, dude, we need to get the band back together,
Yeah, and we cleaned up.
We did. Well, we cleaned up by starting to do drugs again, and then the music just came out.
I meant we literally took some showers and then
it had been years.
Snorted some lines and then we were good to go.
Snorted some lines, wrote some lines.
Wrote some lines.
Good times.
Man, we really derailed.
But what year was it? Was that 2005 or 6?
So technically the band started in 2006. So our old guitarist, Jordan, and I kind of got together. I'd written some songs, and we self-produced a really short album for a guy named Tony Mallory.
Who's moving to Nashville.
Who is moving to Nashville. Yeah. He's a really wonderful singer.
Good guy, too.
He's a really good guy. I love him. So we cut a really short record. It was kind of gospel-ish soul-ish. I don't know. It's just Spike a lot Lewis of
played some soul gospel.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, it's me trying to imitate Brian Wilson like a little bit, but it's mostly just like piano and voice. And a year later, so this would have been 2007, we decided to. Well, I had a new record for him, but we decided to like do them both at the same time, like re-record the original album and then do a new one. And do a double album, and that's when we added bass and drums. And Johnny made me promise him, as senior year of high school, if you ever start a band, I'm your bass player.
Yep. I needed practice. I didn't have anybody to play with, and I always wanted to play in a band. I started when I was like 15, and I was terrible. I still am terrible. I told you after Uncle Bill's, we went to get Uncle Bill's out in West County.
I remember those.
And I was like, dude, Charlie, I don't know where you're going, man, but I want you to bring it with you. Because I listened to Daunted Soul, and I remember thinking, I was like 17 years old, and I was like, man, for like an 17 or 18 year old, like this kid like knows his songwriting, and I don't know anything about that, but I want to be a part of it. And then I
Do you remember why I think of Uncle Bill's? Do you remember why?
Yeah, it was a fuck ass.
No. That's a different story.
Yeah, that is. Well, okay, guys. Like, that's going to be a different story in a few minutes.
No, you ran for a Mr. Mustang.
Oh, my God. Our first, yes.
And
I didn't run. I was nominated. Yeah,
you were nominated.
And I was robbed.
And you were very robbed.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad. And I remember telling you, I was like, dude, I'm going to buy you dinner. And we went and we got Uncle Bill's.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of that kindled a very long standing.
Yeah, our band came together over pancakes. I just was like, this is kind of fun. I'm glad that I asked myself this question because I hadn't thought about it in a while. But yeah, by the way, though, you said Mr. Mustang, just to clarify to the listeners, Mr. Mustang is like the male beauty pageant in Marquette High School. That's where he went.
John was notoriously beautiful. I mean, most...
I was a chubby little fetus. Like, I really
don't listen to him. Women only looked at John for his body and his looks. And it took many years
for
of counseling. For
my undying friend zone friendship. John, he's not menacing. He hasn't hit puberty yet. That was my gig in high school, you know?
It took many years of counseling for John to realize that there's something on the inside, too, that is also beautiful. Not just his body, not just his looks.
This old thing.
And now he's a complete person and plays bass in the band.
So. Nice.
I wanted to play so long, and I remember even asking him, like, Charlie and I took a music theory class together.
Yeah, that's where we really started to hang out.
Yeah, and I just remember I was like, well, because I asked you about playing music and recording, and I was so curious. I was like, well, I mean, like,
I haven't recorded yet, but I was definitely writing.
But Jordan bought that recorder that I still have in my house, that little MP3 CD burner recorder thing. I still have that. I can't do anything with it. I'm just going to, it's like an artifact of my past.
It's hilarious.
But I remember just being like, hey, can I be in your band? And you're like, I don't have a band. Leave me alone. And I was like, yeah, you do.
You will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that worked out well. So 2007, we added bass, we added drums, and essentially became a band. And we rehearsed real quickly. I mean, we learned songs and recorded them in under 3 months.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy to think about now.
For young kids, too. I mean, but the thing is, though, we're good at rehearsing. All of us had, you had piano lessons up to that point and stuff like that. Yeah. And, like, did you sing in church choirs and stuff, or was it just piano?
I wasn't going to sing on that album. That was for Tony. Tony was going to sing Beautiful Strangers, and we had so many conflicts with scheduling that I was like, F it, I'm just going to sing it.
You can say fuck on this. The FCC doesn't.
So I said fuck it.
Yeah, Charlie's so innocent.
So I kind of sang that whole album, not expecting to do so. I planned on Tony, but it didn't work out. Which
he
was
sang
fun.
One side of it because we released a double. Yeah, we released a double project. Our first project.
So he sang the songs that he knew, which was Daunted Soul, the first project, again re-recorded for this, and then a year later we turned around and did the same thing. We like learned an album and recorded
it over a summer
in one summer.
And that was, that's the only time that we had together, because we were starting college. Like I went away to Mizzou, and Brian was a year younger, so he still had a senior year of high school.
He was at Purdue. He was at,
yes. You went up to Indiana, and then Charlie, you were about to start over at Lyndon.
I was here, and then Jordan was in Oklahoma. Yeah. So we were
like an asterisk on the map.
Yeah, we literally had three states covered as far as, you know, where the band was located.
Yeah.
We've always been like, Charlie is a slave driver in rehearsal. No, which is a good thing. Like, that's not a bad thing at all. Like, we run very efficient rehearsals. I think
organized is just the better word.
No, like, he quite literally, like, whips us and stuff like that, but...
It's a magic lasso.
Yeah, I meant that metaphorically, but seriously. Help me, Shane. Help me. Help me. Did you see me blinking the Morse code of help me to you?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. No, but yeah, like that's one thing though is whenever I hear other bands talking about like, oh man, yeah, we've been in the studio for like 4 months. It's like, oh, what do you have done? Like, oh, we've done like three tracks. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why haven't you practiced? Like, are you guys just learning the song on tape right now? Because it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, Charlie's organizational skills, though, I attribute to us being able to learn and pick up these songs quickly because the method is Charlie has something new that he wants to do. Charlie writes everything. I'm simply just, and Charlie a lot of times too has an idea of what part I'm going to play on bass, and then I'll embellish or I'll collaborate.
Yeah.
Sometimes like me and Brian, like being the rhythm section, we will have like a different idea because we're like, well, what if it's like this?
Right.
And some it takes us both voting to trump Charlie. Sure. But then sometimes Charlie has to stick strong. He's like, no, I've already orchestrated for string. Like this is the texture that it's going to be.
It's an interesting dialogue that I think I've learned a lot from doing. The last album, which was our self-titled, and then working on the new album, is that whole process of communication. Because I come to the band with like really densely orchestrated songs that I like can't like show them. I can't like play them all the different parts or whatever. So I'm showing them like, all right, here's the bass groove. Like here are the parameters of what the bass has to do.
What you envision.
The chords, and like. Here's sort of the rhythm I'm wanting, and then it's sort of a dialogue of like the band's going to do something different with it, which is part of the plan. It's like you guys, I'm giving you some notes, but it ultimately becomes John and Brian, like rhythm section, shaping a song, and you know then it becomes an issue of just making sure I know it's going to align with like strings and horns and where the hits are and. And sometimes
there's been a few times too where you're like, oh, that's a great idea, and you've early in the process you've been able to retool stuff. But sometimes though, Charlie will be like, no, we have to do it this way.
Yeah, like you know,
this is a pain he has to write.
Yeah, sometimes there's a great idea, but it's like it's just going to sound really weird with what I know. Just we have to stick with. So it's been good.
It's this thrill though playing this music. Like, sorry to interrupt you, Charlie. I know you write it all, but the thing is, I got to tell you from a person that's a civilian just playing the music. I'm not the fearless leader here. Thank God, because it would be the most disorganized fucking ever if I was. But it's a thrill though, because sometimes there's a couple times that I've doubted. I'm like, why are we playing like this? Sounds like this is kind of boring right now. And Charlie's like, no, trust me. And he leads me through the woods blindfolded. And then, sure as shit, when we finally have that rehearsal,
I bring him the whip.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's for after the rehearsal. But no, but then we finally have that rehearsal when we invite the horns or the backup vocalists and the honeys. Then I'll be like, oh, I get it now. It's this wonderful, you know, light bulb moment because I'm like, oh, that's why I got to play this simple part and just shut the fuck up. Yeah. John, it's not about me. I'm just a bassist after all, you know. And I guess it's Charlie. He writes these very beautiful, intricately designed songs. If I say so myself, type of deal. Sure, but
there's a lot going on, and again, it's sort of, you know, me learning how to like communicate that to you guys and making it all work and even just planning ahead and like remembering like, oh yeah, I scored that little string run, like that's gotta stick out.
Charlie is so meticulous though. Like we play off chord sheets that are perfectly done the first time. I don't know, like if any other musicians listen to this, like, oh well, I scribbled down three chords on a napkin and then we put it up on this chalkboard that we all look at while we rehearse, but Charlie gives us all our separate parts with chord sheets there, and
well, and
they coincide with vocals. Like
it's funny that the chord sheets are pretty much the first thing I do, because they work as the what's the word, like a precursor to the score.
Yes.
Because I know all the just the way I write chord sheets, every chord is a bar, like it's four beats, so it gives me the perfect amount of like, all right, I know we have eight bars here or whatever, and I can identify how many measures for the verse and chorus or whatever. Like that's sort of my like map all on one page.
Because when there's a chart, it can be like measure 52 because he looks down, he's like, oh, times four times four times four, and he's like, oh, this would be
right
around 52 for you guys. Right. So that's
so having that
when we rehearse.
Having that, because when you start a score, I mean, it's really, really big. It's just easy to, you know, kind of get lost in that. But the chord sheet's kind of the initial, like, one page. I know where everything is at.
A framework.
So kind of, yeah, framework's a good word for it. So I always kind of build off that. But, I mean, there's give and take. I mean, if I cut things out of the score, I've got to adjust the chord sheet and vice versa. I mean...
But so the bottom line, though, our days upon days of work for each album, yeah, for you, like, in just the amount of discipline that he has, like, I have the best job in the band because I don't have that much setup. I have an amp and a bass, and I plug it in, and I, smoke a cig, and then I just play. And but, like, Charlie's thought about all these things, yeah, and, like, him being such a thoughtful, like, organized person, like, helps him do what he does.
Well, you know, in this last album, I mean, there was very little in the way of having to reshape stuff. I mean, I learned so much from that album, the self-titled, that, you know, this time around, things were a lot, like, they just felt better the first time around. And even, you know, I remember, you know, when we started doing shows at the very beginning, I know specifically Save Me a Dance, like, never quite felt like it was there.
Yeah.
And we played it a couple times live, and then we sort of rebuilt the song and re-talked about how, like, the pacing went. And then, you know, so we worked out all the kinks of that song, and it turned out really
great. Also very honest with each other's parts, too, because we all were able to give our honest criticism on what each person was doing. Because I had a super busy bass line, you're like, chill out. And Brian agreed, and then Brian's part...
He cleaned it up a lot, and that is one of the.
We haven't talked about Grant yet, by the way. We need to tell people that Grant Alexander is our guitarist, and he's a wonderful man.
He came on later in the first album. He's been a lot more prominent in the recent record, which I'm sort of getting to. But
that dude's geared out. He's so virtuosic. He's awesome. Grant's the best.
He's wonderful. But I was gonna say, so Save Me a Dance, like. And there were a couple other songs where it took a couple months of, like, sitting with it and, like, really getting to know the song. This time, it's, like, because I anticipated a lot of that, like, how things were going to work out, I think this time around, like, none of the songs had that. Like, we did one show, and we walked away from it, and it all felt ready to be recorded.
Yeah.
And we kind of had that discussion, and... and I think, you know, part of that is even as simple as having someone like Grant from the get-go, having a guitarist who could really, you know, weave in, like, his part from the beginning.
He's a beautiful icing on the cake. And you already have a lot of icing when it comes to having horns and the honeys. Yeah. But the honeys are almost a tonic center. Like, they lock down the mids with you because, like, it's not a monophonic vocal line. It's a polyphonic vocal line with... Yeah. With everything, and
the Honeys, those are our backing singers, three girls.
They're
the kind of the focal point of the music, or at least they've become that way. That's another thing.
They're so tight harmonically. It sounds like I enjoy listening to them play. Like, whenever you have them rehearsal, it's always just such a treat because I get distracted from my parts while I play because I'm just like listening to the beautiful things that are happening.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. I'm very lucky to be a part of like a kind of a you know, a different type of band. You're like, we're not making noise and Charlie's building some sonic webs, you know. I love it.
originally the album wasn't scored for female voices, and that was probably the biggest like textural shift that we made about a year in. So we started that project in 2012, and we had a male quartet, and then me singing. So it was like a very dark,
dirgy almost too. Like it's
well, it was a very like mid dark sound. And especially with my voice already being like a baritone texture. So it just got way too muddy. And really, it was kind of a practical issue. Like, I had a really hard time, like, keeping dudes who could sing, that were good enough to sing, that had the time for it and everything. But I knew a couple girls that, you know, probably did have the time. So I rescored everything for female voices. And, like, just out of necessity, out of, you know, knowing that I could get those people to do it. And sonically, it was the best decision ever. I mean, it sounded so much better, so much brighter. Like, I think they enrich my voice a lot more.
They do, because they add a high end to your voice, because yeah, you do yeah. have, you. He has like a mid-lower voice, yeah. which on average...
But I sing in like a baritone range.
Yes.
I go really, really high.
But it's so not typical to be a lead voice of a rock and roll or, you right. know, Motown band, like right. having that voice. I mean, yeah. Motown, you always heard like, yeah, baby. You know, like, it's all guys doing the falsetto the whole time. Yeah, and then Charlie can still sing a lot better. He can still do a falsetto, but he doesn't believe in it. He doesn't believe himself when he sings it. So
I've had more.
His chest voice.
I've had to.
Yeah. But no, you nailed it. I remember there was the best part from the last album from Educated Guess.
I didn't do it for probably a year or two.
You did it. Steve Carosello first did that.
Yeah.
And then he inspired you with it because like you practiced it. And I remember one time you busted out rehearsal. I was like, yeah, Chucky, finally, you're doing it.
It's an A natural for all you vocal people out there.
yeah.
It's an A natural. Again, I'm a baritone. It's a very high note. But yeah, I falsetto the shit out of it.
Yeah.
This is my curse.
I mean, that's not what the tone is. Charlie, you have a piano around here. We can find it. Do not. Is that it?
I don't know.
Who gives a shit?
Exactly.
That's one thing I was going to get to, though, too, is Jordan was our original guitarist mm-hmm. for the yeah. first, you know, you could consider it three projects, but I mean, I'm saying like first two full
yeah,
projects. And Jordan, who has been a close friend of us, like through, you know, middle and high school type, well, yeah, middle for you.
Yeah, I've known him a long time.
I got to know him finally like junior of high school. Because he was a guy that was always around my group of friends, but we weren't like directly friends until we started playing music together. Yeah. And Jordan was always, he was kind of like a part writing buddy with you. Like, you guys used to sit down and kind of like hash stuff out together and really test things out.
So I mean, this was before the arrangements got big quick, but they were never quite as ornate as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
but Jordan was sort of my go-to as far as like, instead of having a string orchestra and brass, I had guitar. Like, I wrote all these guitar parts. And so we'd sit down and I'd basically work through songs with him first and outline, like do all the arrangements as far as what the guitar was going to do melodically and like any of the gaps where it's like, I don't know how to play guitar. So Jordan, like, come up with whatever needs to come here.
But he had played punk music before he ever played our music too.
It's really fascinating how that all sort of worked out, because he really is an excellent
musician.
What
were they? Flight 801. Yes. I remember they used to always play like the high school talent shows and stuff like that. Oh yeah. But then it's different though, like seeing, because like Jordan for you, like he was your first string parts, and he was also a very close friend. You guys like had a personal and professional relationship, but then the transition has been different.
Yeah, no, and a lot of that that relationship of writing guitar parts and like, and even just like bringing songs to him that, I mean, not having a lot of confidence as a writer to be able to like work with someone and him say like, yeah, that sounds really cool. Like, that was really huge for me just in terms of developing confidence. So when he left the band, again,
he's such a sweet man. He's the sweetest, nicest guy too.
Really is. You know, our first project without him, it was like, I sort of replaced guitar with an orchestra. That's sort of what I did. But I had the confidence to do it. And it was just kind of interesting for me to like really go all in with those songs. And I had the confidence to
before
do it. Like, I didn't feel
grand,
like...
Though, I remember like you did use the strings to replace the guitar. But then I remember... Yeah. Like we get Grant Alexander, which was such an opportunity for us because he's very virtuosic. He's a wonderful player. He's the type of guy you can put anything in front of him and he will nail it. He's got very quick hands, but very tasteful hands. He's not the type of guitarist that just squeezes all the notes into a measure as he can. He's tasteful and disciplined.
We've been really fortunate in that both Jordan and Grant, even though they play very differently, their personalities as guitar players are extremely giving. And really humble.
There's no arrogance. There's no like, I don't need guitars, dude. Like, I'm gonna get four minute solo right now. Like, that doesn't happen.
If the best thing for a song is not playing for 16 bars, they will not touch a note for 16 bars. And that's what's great about both of them is they have a sense of space with a song and knowing when to play, when not to play. And I've been
letting your parts breathe. Yeah. You
know? And I mean, I know plenty of guitarists and I mean, a lot of really nice people. And I feel like I'm really lucky in that the two that have been in my band are just so excellent with that skill because that's what I need for, you know.
We also don't have a very ego-y band though. Like, we have like, I mean, you're obviously like, hey, Charlie would be head dictator. I mean, like you'd be head dick. And the thing is though, is like, we don't have... People, I've heard so many bands talk about, oh my god, we got a fist fight over the song. Like, we don't bring the egos in as much. It's not like that. Like, we create something together. I mean, you create it, and then we collaborate on it, and you rein us in if you don't like it, and we get to give our feedback, and Charlie takes it to heart. Like, as a leader, it's really cool to work with a guy that, like, takes my suggestions to heart. Like, I've always been honored that he's done that because he dwarfs my musical writing skill. He dwarfs, like, my ability to hear parts. And sometimes I'll sing him something and I was like, what if the guitar's like, da, 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 da. And then Charlie's like, I see what you mean, but what about this? You know, I don't know.
The band communicates really, really well. And part
honesty,
of that,
too.
there's a lot of honesty. And, I mean, I keep learning, you know, communication, even with like the last two projects, like dealing with all the tempo issues, because we had very different, especially Brian and I, had very different approaches with tempo. And what I've really learned from, especially the last album that I think was less of a problem this time around, was he's the freaking drummer. Like,
he's
just
the heartbeat.
And he's so excellent at what he does. And it's like, I'm just going to kind of trust him and lean on him, rather than me like really sticking to whatever number I came up with when I came up with the arrangement. But just being like, I ultimately have a tremendous respect for the players in the band because I can't play drums and I can't play bass. So like, you know, when someone brings up an issue or a different perspective on how it needs to be approached, of course I'm going to...
But even though the leader, what he's saying, what I can say, you wouldn't say this, but like Charlie as a leader has the ability to defer sometimes to things. Because there have been a couple times where he's had a part and I'll play it, but then Charlie's like, I don't really like that thing. I'm like, but what, you know, what about this? And I can convince him about a different doot-doot-doot that I want to play.
Yeah, the doot-doot-doot.
Yeah, a little doot-doot-doot-doot, a bump-bump-bump, bump-bump-bump, some doot-doot-doots.
But it makes everything go so smoothly, and it's like, that's why
we're just good friends. Like, I mean, we play music well together, and we haven't gotten into fist fights. We haven't gotten pissed off. The only tense rehearsal that I can remember within the last couple of years was the rehearsal that we decided on tempos for the last project. Because that was like 4 hours long. And we didn't like get in arguments, but it was just like, Brian's like, I think it should be 108. And Charlie, it was something so small. It's like, it should be 104. And I'm just like, that's 4 beats per minute, guys. Nobody can fucking understand that.
You know, a lot of that was, I mean, we had done those songs for 3 years. We played them a long time.
Because we played it for such a long time, though, we all had a different idea in our minds and in our hearts about how fast it was. Because when you rehearse it or you play it live, you get those nerves and you play it quicker.
Yeah. We had sat with them kind of for too long. I mean, it worked out. Like, I'm glad we did take
the financing issues
But at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, we got, it was the last thing we did, just like nailing down these numbers. And I mean, it was really, we needed to do it, and it worked out well. But it was
the most mild argument. It'd be like the way that you envision two Canadians arguing, like, I think you should do this. Like, I think you shouldn't. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. And then, like, that was it. Because that's what Canadians do.
It was very, it was focusing a lot more on all the minor nuances of stuff. This time around, it's like, again, I'm trusting Brian more.
It's a more accessible project, though. I think it's a little more accessible even than
the last one. But I think it was like, all right, Brian really liked 114. I thought 112. Like, let's do 114. Let's just roll with it.
Yeah. And then sometimes there's 116 to 112, and you're like, all right, 113. And like, then you guys compromise. Like, I saw that happen.
And everything's worked out really well. I think everybody sounds really good at the tempos we picked. That's about as bad as it gets.
One thing I want to bring up about the new project, though, is how Grant has become a way bigger part of the sound. Because I want to call it Saint Monday, because that's what you're like.
Saint Monday is basically the subtitle of our last album. Just because it was
that one, because Charlie was concentrating so much more on all these string and horn arrangements, Grant was kind of like added in, and like so we found a place for Grant. But this last album, because like he just became such a good integral part of the band, and also like such a good friend of ours, it was so cool seeing him like swing his dick around a little bit more. Like, so he was able to like to just go back in and be like, no guys, this is the part we should do with it. And then we listened to it, we're like, man, that's a cool part. He's so talented, and I think we've made a little bit more of a rocking project.
There was an effort to trim up the arrangements for sonic purposes.
Yeah.
Because it got so dense and so thick. It needed to be more economical for clarity's sake. And as a result, it enabled the band to have a lot more prominence in our space in a song. So there's a really deliberate effort made to kind of start with the band a little bit more and like build really strong rhythm tracks.
I mean, after all, we have played with you for almost 10 years, so I think I deserve a little little recording time there. Letting Johnny shine, you know.
I think the rhythm
the most
section
fun though. Playing bass on this last album. I mean, you can say that every single day. I'm like, oh, this is our best one, but I can see that there's been like a genuine growth with Charlie and his songwriting and his ability to evolve the way that he writes songs to whatever ensemble we have like the most for this project. And I had so much more fun playing this. Like, I got to play some funky lines with this next album that's going to be coming out April 2016.
That's true.
But yeah, which
yeah, I can't wait to release it in April 2016.
April 2016. What's this next one called? I forget.
Another Educated Guest.
It's called Another Educated Guest. April 2016.
Everybody, John just heard for the first time the title of the
album. Yeah, I know. I just played on it. I'm the worst person ever.
I got a really, really good story for you. So for the album West, our last album that we did, prior to, we'll call it phase two, was called West Skyline Drive. Some of you may have heard it, some of you may not have. That's okay.
Who gives a
shit?
So
there was a friend of mine did an interview with some of the players who played, some of the string players on that project. And I'm so terrible at like explaining the big picture to people, because it's like, oh, you're viola, like you just need to know this about the song, or you know, your bass, you need
some
to know this about
the song. Why, though.
I sometimes like forget about like, oh, you don't even know what it's called or anything like that. But there was a an interview with, I think it was the violist of that project, and the interviewer,
is that Ted?
It was you working. No, it was Jake Wandel.
Okay, cool.
So the interviewer was Jorgen, and he asked him a question about the feel of West Skyline Drive. And Jake, who knows that I lived on a street called West Skyline Drive, like kind of looked at him perplexed and began to describe the neighborhood. He had no idea that the album was
He's like, it's a nice middle class neighborhood.
Yeah. It's extremely white.
Exactly.
It's in Baldwin. It's like not quite affluent, but it's comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. Happy. They're happy there.
And so the interviewer had to be like, okay. So what do you think about the feel of the album?
Yeah.
You had to basically ask him the same question.
He's like, again, it's called West Skyline Drive. Oh, that's what I played for the last 6 months? Oh, okay.
So anyway, I don't think I've told many people another educated guess, but...
So another educated guess, April 2016.
So we just played a bunch of the new stuff at Off-Broadway a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And
what day was it? It was like August 26th.
21st.
Yeah.
We're probably going to do another show in January. I haven't booked a date, but we'll do another show in January and play all the new stuff. We'll play the stuff from our just released record. And we may even do an old song.
Oh, snap.
Spoiler alert. So
I think you're supposed to say spoiler alert before you say.
Oh.
Damn shit.
Ah,
damn.
Crap.
That'd be great, like a person like goes off the road, they're like, oh, sorry, road work. Oh, we forgot. It was road work. Whoops.
Yeah,
I really dig this album, guys. I was actually listening to it on the way down.
Thanks, buddy.
To get me in the mood, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you like in particular from it?
Yeah, like
don't put him on the spot.
No. Because what he said he was listening. I mean, I'm always curious though, because everybody that I ask always has a different thing that they take from it, and that's why I'm always curious.
Yeah.
I've heard. I think probably the biggest indicator to me of success is that I've had so many people tell me different favorite songs.
Like, I've had people tell me different.
Like Saint Monday is my favorite, or The Best Part's my favorite, or Maybe is my favorite. It's like that's as good as you can get as a songwriter. That like there's sort of this equal distribution of
You know, it's not just like the one hit and then everything else is bullshit. So what do you like though, Shane? On the spot,
you don't have to answer.
I do like Saint Monday a lot. I like Morning to Come.
You kind of like little like kind of like poppy.
Yeah, those stand out to me. Yeah,
nice.
Johnny, what's your favorite to play?
My favorite to play off the last project. Yeah. Probably When I Have Cried.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I was gonna guess that
or Saint Monday, because my part it took a long time for me to get that song because I missed the chorus like every single time for the first like 6 months that we had played it. Like I just
I helped miss chorus the record.
Oh yeah. And the thing is like that part I feel like I as a bassist I was able to embellish the most and like kind of shine a little bit. Like I did like feel a little riffy things that I'm still really proud of when I play. You know, I don't know. So it'd be like When I've Cried. Because When I've Cried too, you actually kind of like set me loose. You didn't really have much of a concept with bass, and you just kind of like let me, you're like, some fifthy. And then like, and then I was able to ring. And
well,
then
I remember it was real busy, and I was like, dude, cut it in half. And then you cut it in half, I was like, oh, big space. And it just felt so much
because then Brian was doing like little tinglies, like the Isaac Hayes type of feel on the hi-hat.
Tinglies is a technical term it for 16th notes on the hi-hat.
Yeah, the tingly tings.
Yeah, the tingles. Tingly tings.
Biddly bop. And I was playing the doo-to-doos and derp-a-derps. In a couple bounce.
These are all, again, technical terms. You can look them up on our
bounce,
website.
Bounce, doo-to-doos, bounce. Who am I?
Yeah, what, we had, John's on the show around April or something when the record was going to come out.
Mm-hmm.
I forget which
I did play. I did play When I've Cried, just because another reason too. Like I like the part that I play, but I also really love the vocalist part in the chorus, and I also love the like super articulated horn lines. Like there's like a lot of really cool swells, and like I really love that type of feel because I really dig on funk and that type of feel because it's. When Charlie first described the groove, to Brian. Like, a lot of times whenever Charlie describes a groove to Brian, I'm kind of like a rhythm translator because I can beatbox to Brian. I'll be like, I know what Charlie means.
And I'll be like, bop, bop, not boot, boot, beat.
Yeah, I'll be like, you know, I can do that to Brian. And he's like, oh, yeah, for sure, I get it. And I just loved how everything interacted. And that's why I can't get enough of it. Yeah, I wish we still played it live because we didn't play it the last show and I was a little heartbroken.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll bring it back. It has a vaguely disco sound. Mainly with the way like the kick is all quarters, the boom, boom, and then I think there's 16 notes in that.
Well, he does like a little bell on the ride cymbal, you know, like a few times. And Brian's got some busy hands. That dude's got
chops.
Yeah, he does. He has some chops, and he's become, you know, like super, you know, white collar engineer, and that dude still kills it. Like he is. If I could be half as good at bass as Brian is on drums, I would be a pretty damn good bassist. I'm super proud. Like every single time, I've never once been like, man, that drummer's better than Brian. Like when I've seen the local act, like Brian, I kind of wish he had a little more acclaim because I think that dude deserves a little bit of credit for what he can do. He's awesome.
He's very idiotic.
One of the smartest people that I know. Also,
oh, absolutely. His playing is very idiosyncratic.
Grant, Charlie, Grant, and Brian are some of the smartest people I know, and like I'm obviously one of the fucking stupidest people that I know, and I'm surrounded by these people. Like the mean IQ for the band without me is super high, but like I kind of balance this back out to be like normal people with my IQ. It's just because they can all pay attention to stuff, and I can't. Obviously, from listening to me talk the last few minutes.
It's still I'm just happening. Trying to choke down my beer.
Oh, yeah. Hey, well, once again, this podcast brought to you by Bush Camel Pants. Head of the mountains.
No, I think it's this
podcast. Oh, Clarence Wright is the mountaineer.
I think it's this podcast has brought you Bush Camo Cans.
Yeah. We are the reason that Bush Camo Cans.
Bush Camo Cans are influencing the dialogue of this.
Well, excuse me, podcast. I got to pee out some of this Bush Camo Cans. Please.
Can we hit pause? I don't know.
No. Just do it. Do it, Charlie. You know what you can say while I'm gone? Whatever you wanted to say because I'm like a interrupting move.
That's
over here.
I can do that.
Yeah, Johnny the Interrupter. What if I go pee and I come back and like not a single word was spoken? Talk amongst yourselves. Yeah,
we can do that.
We can give you a topic.
Oh God, soda crackers.
Hey, watch the bird in there, okay?
Okay. He's a nut.
Yeah, Johnny's hilarious. I love that guy.
I was going to bring up KDHX because I know you guys went on Chris's show a while back.
Yeah, that was really fun.
Yeah, Chris is a good friend and been on the show as well. But you guys got to be on his crowd quite well.
Yeah, Chris is hilarious. He's so funny. He just kills me.
Yeah, but that's I'm glad that they reached their goal. They raised their funding to
$1 million.
But
that is great.
Yeah, keep KDX I can't spit this. Bush beer is kicking in.
I know. They keep KDHX alive.
Right.
They've always been really, really supportive of the Educated Guests, and I feel like at this last record in particular, they played them a ton. Several different DJs have played tracks from it, and a lot of different tracks from it, which has been really very flattering, of course, and it means a lot to have a radio station kind of putting their money where their mouth is. Like, they're supporting local music,
sure.
And they've always been really good to us, and all the guys I know from there have been just really nice and pretty genuine people, so.
Yeah.
I've gotten the opportunity to work with them for a couple things. Like, I got to do, they used to do this fundraising event called the Art Attack, where, like, like local artists donated artwork, but they also had like ringer pieces that they bought from like thrift stores, and so people would would bid on the artwork, and if it didn't reach a certain level, then a person would literally destroy the piece of art on stage. And I got the opportunity of a lifetime. I got to dress up as Evil Bob Ross, and I got to destroy paintings on stage. It quite literally was a dream come true. Like, have you ever envisioned, like, I don't go to the art museum and rip one of these fucking paintings off the wall and just destroy it? Like, I got to destroy something beautiful that somebody put their heart and soul into, and it was just so viscerally satisfying. And I got to thank KDHX for that opportunity to do that. Like, they really are. I'm so glad they met their goal with that little emergency fundraiser thing. And, like, I hope for the best, because, like, they literally are the most unique, best, like, completely, like, they have integrity. Like, they are an independent station that doesn't get all this corporate payroll of bullshit. Like, they're not a bullshit iHeartRadio station. Like, they don't rely on an app. Right. To play the same song into the ground for 4 months. Like, they play music from artists that are local, that need airtime and need people to figure out what they sound like, but don't have the ability to pay for that or don't have the record deal.
It's a great...
I love them.
It's great. A great institution, and again, they've been really good to us, and so obviously we're a little partial, but...
I love that video you did with Chris too.
Oh my God, Chris Ward is a genius. Like, I just honestly, I read what he wrote. Chris Ward is a super creative, awesome individual.
Yeah.
And Stryker was in it too. Stryker Spurlock, such a funny kid. Like, I feel like I'm the youngest of three boys, but I've never had a little brother. I feel like Stryker's like a little brother of sorts, even though he probably wouldn't think that by any means. Sorry, Stryker, but I just. Just want to, you know, give you a noogie.
What's his last name?
Spurlock. Yeah. Stryker Spurlock.
I think he friended me on Facebook.
Quite literally the coolest name ever. Stryker Spurlock. This is bullshit. Is this his spam account? I'm like, no, that's his real name. Stryker Spurlock.
Johnny has admitted many a times, if someone friends me on Facebook, I don't know who they are. Mutual friends, Johnny. All right, they're in. They're good.
Oh my God, I'm like your door guy for Facebook. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. He's cool. He's cool, Chuck.
They're my Facebook friends. So
that's probably how I got it.
Oh yeah.
It's like Shane who Presley, like, well, Elvis or nothing.
Shane was like, hey Charlie, my name's Shane. I was checking out your spring break picks, and I just thought that we he's like, I didn't even know what a spring break. I'm 28 years old. I didn't
look at this all the time. All the time.
Yeah, can I look at your dick? Like, that's what the message Charlie is saying. Speaking of looking at your dick, you know.
I already told that joke earlier.
No.
I can't repeat it.
So. Okay.
Well, we sort of talked off mic, but do you remember what show that was where we met at the Firebird?
Yes. It was, what is his name?
Because I remember.
He told a joke about, you know, like 9/11 was an inside job, and then it was like 7/11 was an inside
job. Oh, Neil Hamburger!
No, that's Ben Kronberg.
Ben
Kronberg, okay.
Yes, I care for it.
Yeah, so it was, it's so weird. I do not like playing solo. It's not ideal for me. It's not really that
fun. He's a fine piano player, everybody.
Kelsey McClure asked me to open up for this, and I love Kelsey. I mean, I'd mow her lawn if she asked me to, you know. Mm-hmm. And it sounded kind of fun. So, of course, I can't just, like, do a bullshit 30 minutes. Like, I've got to do something, and I learned all these covers. It was not good. I was so nervous. But I covered Jump by Van Halen. Like, I learned it. I sang it. I also covered I'll Wait by Van Halen, which, if you've never tried to learn that song, never ever laugh at Van Halen ever again.
Dude, Van Halen is the shit, man.
Dude, that song is so hard. There's so many chords in it. Of course, then I realized it was written by, or it was co-written with Michael McDonald. That song is
a St. Louis treasure, by the way. Michael McDonald.
Absolutely.
If you listen to the Rock Paper Podcast, Michael McDonald, we love you. You are a treasure.
Oh, that song.
A creep, forgetting.
that song is absolutely brilliant, and it's. I learned that. I learned like a Springsteen medley. Man, I was so nervous singing by myself. Because that's when I realized.
Full believes by Mac McDonald. Sorry, I'm still thinking about Mac McDonald.
That's okay.
Yeah. She paid him some work, breaking the long road.
Dude, I get chills when I hear his voice, like going to falsetto.
A sentimental fool.
His voice is kind of amazing, though.
It's really good.
To go that low and then just.
Oh, yeah.
Had a place in his arms.
I've smoked my falsetto off years ago.
That's all right.
I can't anatomically do it anymore. Plus, my, you know, these nuts, you know. That's why.
These nuts.
Because of these nuts.
These nuts.
These nuts.
These nuts.
Yeah.
I can't help but to go to 40 Year Old Virgin whenever my
oh,
yeah,
yes.
I just if I have to hear Yamo be there one more time, Yamo burn this place down.
Quit. I love how like he literally makes like a death threat to all the employees and all the customers in the store, and then she's like, "Quit being a smart ass." That's what she tells him. Yamo, put a bullet in my brain. Doesn't he say something like that? Oh yeah, that's classic.
Yeah, that's what I. That's my Michael McDonald.
Ain't no mountain
they were just on. Him and the Doobie Brothers were on Fallon. Just
he was like an original member of him, yeah. I think. And then he actually played with Steely Dan for a while as well. Like he's the one in the song Peg. He's the one that goes like Peg. It will come back to you. Like he's the one that goes. It's going like.
Ah. He's a really talented vocalist.
He's really good. Like the thing is, though, it's like I just love it because honestly, like those songs were cutting edge and super badass, and they still are. I mean, a lot of the songs are like the Mount Everest to cover. Like they're really difficult, especially like What a Fool Believes. I looked up that chord progression because I was like, maybe I can dick this around on guitar. Maybe I can play it. Like no way. Like, at all. Like, you'd be like three people to help
you
out.
You would never laugh at Michael McDonald if you had to cover him.
Oh my god, yeah. It's ridiculously hard, and like that's why I respect him so much. And like now like to like a non-discerning ear, like, oh, this is like total cheese dick music. Like, no, it's not. That shit's saucy. That's
it's
really
all,
good stuff.
It's all fun and games until you have to learn it.
Exactly.
Like, nope.
Yeah. Like, it's an E flat minor. Jesus Christ. I thought it was a good tone. It was a good key for my voice.
I think they did two songs on Fallon. One was Taking It to the Streets.
Oh yeah.
I can't think of what else they did on that. Well, there was another
but they did I Keep Forgetting, which actually was sampled for the song Regulate by Warren G.
Warren G?
Yes.
Warren G?
No. Warren G the rapper. Warren G and Nate Dogg.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking of the president.
Yeah. Just hit the east side of the LBC on a mission trying to find Mr. Warren G. That's Nate Dogg's part. Because he was like the opera singer of hip-hop in the 90s and early 2000s.
We should probably pour out some for...
Oh my god. R.I.P. Nate Dogg. Hey, rest in peace, Nate Dogg. Hey, shout out to Nate Dogg if you're listening to this podcast.
Mount.
Yeah. Was that morbid?
But, I saw Warren G's coming to Pops in October.
I'll go.
Yeah.
That sounds maybe a
little bit. I have not been to Pops in a long time.
That's a good place to get stabbed and pissed on at the same time.
Is that like their.
I love it. Yeah, that's their slogan. I just love it too because people are just like, why do you feel like such shit today? They're like, I went to Pops last night. That's always how I was like, dude, what's wrong with you today, Andrew? Like, went to Pops. You idiot. Like, they serve booze till 6, you know, like normal smart people do. Like, no, don't do that. People don't need that. They don't need that.
And then you walk out and you got to go to the Philly wagon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. The amount of tribal tattoos there, it's like a very high volume of tribal tattoos as opposed to other places which have a lower volume of tribal tattoos. Hey, shout out to anybody who listens to the show that has a tribal tattoo. Dude, do I have any time to talk about this Thursday at all? I'm not sure if it'll, like, if this will air time or whatever.
No, because we're cutting off the first 30 minutes, right?
Yeah, don't.
No. We're going to start right now.
Yeah. Well, guys, like, I do the
I'm Charlie
Brevely. Hey, no, it's me. I'm Travis Minigoni. No. Is this thing on?
I'm joking.
I am. I'm a joke. You're right. But I run a show every Thursday night at Fitz's in the Loop. It's called Thursday Night Mike Night. We're coming up on 4 years doing it. It's St. Louis's like longest running independent open mic. Obviously, we haven't been around as long as the clubs and stuff like that, but we've had crazy longevity compared to the other local shows. And this Thursday will mark the 4th year anniversary of it, and I'm pretty excited about it. So if you guys are open Thursday, it's at, I'm not sure when this is going to get released, but if you can't make it this Thursday, which I mean, come to the next one. Come on out, because and it's always
happening. I can vouch for you. I've been before.
Charles played piano before.
Right? I have. I've laughed. I brought a lady there. It's a great event.
You brought a teddy bear 1 week too. You just brought a teddy bear.
Brought my teddy bear. I brought my lawyer. You know,
yeah. Teddy Foreskin is the name of his teddy bear. Teddy Foreskin. I'm just kidding. Charlie's teddy bear's name is just oddly it's just Hank. He just calls it Hank.
Yeah, Hank and I go everywhere
together. Yeah, he's a good boy.
Yeah.
Dude, so what do you guys think about? Have you guys eaten the? This is totally off subject. Have you guys ever eaten the?
We're gonna cut this out.
Yeah.
The Jack in the Box munchie meals.
No.
Yeah.
Are they good? Oh my god, dude! You gotta get that chicken tater melt. Shout out to Jack in the Box.
Chicken taters.
It's so good. Yeah. I looked it up online. If you eat the entire chicken tater melt munchie meal, it's 2,500 calories. So it is more than your daily allotment of allowed calories for a grown human being.
Which you're probably eating after you've had a day of eating meals.
Oh, yeah, and also, like, oh, you drank 12 beers, which is already 1,200 calories.
It's only available, like, late night hours.
Anyway.
You have to take a breathalyzer to get it.
Oh, yeah.
They have to know you're drunk.
So it's like a fried piece
Otherwise,
of chicken.
Otherwise, it's dangerous.
And there's cheese, and then it's covered in, like, gravy. Or, like, no, it's like cheese sauce. And then it has a hash brown on it, and it's, like, covered in gravy. It's the best fucking sandwich ever. And then it comes with two tacos, and it comes with curly and regular fries.
Halfsies.
All for $6 after 9 p.m. at Jack in the Box. Shout out to Jack in the Box, proud sponsor of the Rock Paper Podcast.
Yep, proud sponsor.
It's incredible.
I derailed the entire show, but I thought about the Jack in the Box munch meal, and I just had to say it to the world.
Dude, food is important. We all eat it.
It's so good.
I love it. I've been eating a lot of pizza lately. I've been doing... I've had Domino's, I've had Papa John's, I've had Jets.
All in... How
in the past 2 weeks.
Okay, I was going to say, if it was within 1 week, I'd be like, dude, how are your BMs doing? That's a lot of cheese. Because cheese, you know, cheese bothers my tum-tum. I love it, but it's...
I don't eat a lot of cheese now.
Neither do I. I don't only eat much pizza. Dairy as much as I... Is, you know, like, I'll have like a... My biggest vice is ice cream. I call it vice cream, because my biggest vice.
I love me some vice cream.
Yeah.
You ever listen to Matt Bronger?
Oh, no. I'm not familiar.
Oh, he's one of my favorite comics.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. I feel bad. Like, when people are like, oh, do you know this comic? I'm like, oh, I'm sorry.
Dude, I'm the same way with music. People are like, oh, you like this band? Like, I've never heard of them. I'm sorry.
You don't like Jimbo and the Buttfucks? They're the best. Like, I've never heard of Jimbo and the Buttfucks. I'm sorry.
I think they're playing Coachella, right?
Oh, exactly. Brochella. Yeah. It's a good place to go max out your dad's credit card, you know? Like, that's the best music festival for that, you know? Dive a heroin overdose. Max out your dad's credit card. Put on a headband. Take a bunch of selfies. Instagram it. Get 10,000 new followers. Die.
Sounds like a Sunday to me.
That's like every Thursday night for me. At Fitz's in the Loop.
Yeah.
Thursday night. At Fitz's.
Shout out to Thursday night.
Yeah. Hey, shout out to Fitz's root beer. Man, just keeping that sugar water going strong.
For real.
Some good shit. They got a new pumpkin spice. Soda available for this month.
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Come get your fall on. That's not the slogan, but I want to tell him, like, that should be a come get your fall on. New demographics. Get new demographics going
on there. I was going to say about Bronger, speaking about the Jack in the Box thing, is he's got a whole routine about, like, how it's like the drunk driving drive-thru. And like, how, like, how old they you know, instead of having a menu to order, you should just have like a, it should just be like a, you know, buttons that you, big padded buttons you push. And he's like, so he's like, you know, dude, I'm getting like 16 burritos, dude. He's like, just punching the button. And then, like, and then
he's like a big picture. I'm like, I want that.
Right. And then he's like saying how, like, you know, how it's got to be like a padded thing so you don't like rip your arm off as you're trying to get your food and stuff. And I don't know. It's just, that's exactly how I feel about that Munchies menu. Like how it's just, you got to be wasted rolling through there. And,
yeah. During the day, I roll by Jack's Box. I'm like, yeah. And then like I have a couple beers. I'm like, yes. Yeah. You know, where have you been all my life?
And he goes on about Taco Bell, how like everything comes out of a gun, like the you know, like the sour cream cannon and stuff, and like it, and he's like the
there's quite a splatter. Yeah. Like, yeah, he, that could just speak my truth.
The guac nine, he says the
yeah. Does the meat come out of a gun?
I don't know, but it should.
The meat is a gun.
Yeah. Hey yo.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Do I have a license for it? I don't know. Just check it out, babe.
So I read a thing saying that Nickelodeon was going to start a new channel of just all 90s shows.
Awesome.
Yeah. How do you guys feel about that?
That's great. Like, yeah, get the millennial crowd to watch Nickelodeon again. Like, recultivate an audience that they already built. That's genius.
I never had cable.
I didn't have it until 7th grade. I watched it at my best friend Dan's house. Growing up, like, there were times you'd be like, let's go out and play. I'm like, no, let's watch cable. And like, shit here that I want to, like, talk about with other kids at school. Like, we gotta watch, like, let me watch Rocko's Modern Life. That's pretty much what I.
What about Double Dare?
Oh, Double Dare? That, honestly, like, I didn't watch it as much. Yeah. I watched Rocko's Modern Life. I mean, like, I didn't get cable until, like, 7th grade. So, like, I watched Rocko's Modern Life. I watched Rugrats.
Yeah.
And, like, and in my grandparents' house, they also had it.
I was telling, I was talking about Rugrats just the other day. We were, me and my wife Stacy were driving around listening to some 90s on 9, and I think, I believe it was Puff Daddy, and maybe Small Money, Will Problems came on, and I was, I was singing along, and I said, man, I haven't heard some, Mace in a while.
And I was, who hot, who not?
I asked, I said, do you remember the Rugrats theme song, for the movie, the Take Me There? And she was like, oh, I don't remember that. And I'm like,
you too.
Yeah. So I was like, but yeah, the, I remember, I think it was, Mace and like 112 or something. And somebody else was on the track, but yeah, they did like the title, theme song or whatever was on it. Or maybe it was at least on the soundtrack. I don't know if it was like the, you know,
you
the,
know what but. Broke my heart in 7th or 8th grade is when Mace came back. He had the Welcome Back, like, I think that was the name of the album, oh, yeah. And it flopped so hard. He was like, hey, man, Mace's big return, and then nobody liked it. That's so sad.
Right.
I really liked him, even though he talked like he had a mouthful of marbles all the time, because I couldn't understand what he said. It just sounded cool, and I liked it.
Sure, yeah.
I like things that sound cool.
I was a Batman kid.
Yeah.
The Batman and
on KCLR. And like 11. Superman. Channel, yeah, KPLR, Channel 11.
I had like this 3-4 year run, and man, that show's incredible.
Was it like the Dark Knight one, like where he was like a teen, or was it like the Batman? Like
it was called Batman the Animated Series. It was like 91 to 94.
I loved that too.
And it was so they took it so seriously. And
it was, I mean, dark for kids.
It was real dark. And I can even watch it now as an adult . And it still lives up. I mean, it's amazing, amazing.
It's like Jackie Chan Adventures. Those are on Netflix. All of Jackie Chan Adventures is on Netflix. I've rewatched it already. It's awesome. Every single day when I got home, like especially before I had cable, I would watch Animaniacs. And then Hysteria came on when I was older. Like Hysteria was on, which was like they made fun of like history, but like they made it like for kids, like so you could like understand history, but they made put like comedy in it. And like there was ways that I remembered stuff that we were studying in school because I saw an episode of Hysteria about it. And also Freakazoid was on Saturday mornings. Freakazoid was awesome. I honestly feel like those Steven Spielberg produced cartoons like Animaniacs and all like those Channel 11 ones, like that helped me develop a sense of humor. I wanted to be funny like them. Like I learned how to like audio mimic stuff.
Really,
I used to watch Chicken Boo. That's how I learned how to make like my chicken noise. It was like, like that's
pretty good.
I learned that from Animaniacs, because I used to watch that, and like the voices were so funny, and I would just like whatever they would say, I would just repeat right away, and I would try to learn it. And like that's, I feel like that's just instrumental in like developing my personality, because I loved it so much. And then I'd watch Fresh Prince, and then like a whole fucking
Fresh Prince is really good.
Yeah.
I was a very fat, lazy kid. That's what it comes down to. We're like, wait, when did you get physical activity? I'm like, shut up! I love TV! Get off my back, Dad! You get a job! And he's like, I already have one. I'm like, I know, I'm 11.
What's just the thought of that?
That painful memories. Shout out to John's painful memories. Big listener to the Rock and Roll podcast.
Gonna need another camo beer.
Yeah, exactly. I'll go on an excursion. Charlie, you ready?
What's that? What's that Andrew Frank joke about? Why don't you do a push up? And I go, Dad, hurry, check the fridge. You're gonna push ups.
Yeah, yeah. There's so good. Oh my god. Oh my god, one of the.
Into the mic, Johnny.
Just one of the coolest guys ever. I love Andrew Frank.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Andrew Frank.
Johnny said, big shout out to Andy Frank.
Yeah. I remember all that 90s Nickelodeon. I remember used to, Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? A little rockapella for you.
So did you
hear
a remix about El Chapo?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the El Chapo. Yeah,
Where
good.
In the World is El Chapo.
Yeah, Funny or Die. Shout out to Funny or Die.
Oh, yeah, big shout. Big support of the show.
Legends
of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah.
That was on Nickelodeon, too. That was one of those shows I would go to my neighbor's house and be like, dude, let's watch Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah.
It's like the white cobras and the green lizards and the black dildos, you know, like all battling it out.
Yeah, I definitely remember the black dildos.
Yeah, that was my favorite. Who's like? How's that not your favorite team?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's you're talking about learning, hysteria or whatever. Like, I learned a lot from of geography from Where in the World and from San Diego.
There were some very well produced children's shows. Yeah. Like when we were, I think we did grow up in a golden age of television. We really did. And like, and even like a golden age of syndicated I'm trying to think of the word, like when somebody like rehashed like reruns, like in the world of syndicated reruns. Yeah. Like we had a wonderful world of like new live written TV, but then also like these reruns. But then reality came along and just fucked everything up.
Well, yeah,
people are like, why would I pay actors? I can just pay these country bumpkins to act like fucking morons on camera, and then the producer will make a story out of it.
Yeah. Well, we grew up in an era where, cable was just coming about to where people was giving all kinds of people opportunity, that weren't, so you were getting a lot of different, stuff like that compared to what...
Yeah, because if the city had one venue, but then suddenly like 10 venues were built, it was like, oh my God, I have a lot of options to play between all of these.
Yeah.
God, dude. Legends of the Hidden Temple was so cool. I love that like clay, like... mask thing that talked to him with the red eyes. It was right. Like, you must proceed to the temple. It was like the Zordon of
Power Rangers.
Yeah, you watched Power Rangers?
Sure, too? Man.
Yeah. I just loved Zordon.
Me and my brother, we'd get out there on the trampoline and we'd always have to, pretend we were, what Power Ranger we were going to be. And
I just never understood why they didn't walk around in the Megazord like all the time.
Yeah.
Because every single theme of every episode was like, oh, guys, teamwork makes it happen. We can't accomplish this by ourselves. Like, I get it, Power Rangers. Every single one of those individual robots sucks and is ineffective, but it only works when it's combined with the other ones. Like, so why don't you just walk around with the combined one, like, all the fucking time, right? I never understood that.
Yeah.
And Zordon, for some reason, I always felt like he was, like, a pervert. Like, I felt like he had, like, a big crush on Kimberly, the Pink Ranger. I was like, Kimberly, you must... show us your tits, because it's for the galactic justice. Please. Come on. I need this. I'm stuck in a glass tube. Come on.
Right.
Please, Kimberly. The internet doesn't really exist yet. Come on, Kimberly.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a pretty good Zord.
Power Rangers, you must proceed to the Megazord. Just do the Megazord, because the regular robots don't work on their own. Every single theme of that, like, Charlie's back. Charlie had to go pee.
What? Yeah, no, I've been here the whole time.
Yeah, totally. Like, it was just, yeah.
Yeah, man, I think the Power Rangers are...
People know you weren't here. They couldn't hear your heavy breathing and scratching your chest hair. Charlie's big mouth. It's all the, always out of breath.
It's all the bacon I ate in the morning.
He sounds like my brother's German Shepherd, just kind of like clicking with his throat constantly.
I'm basically a dog.
You know what I just realized? There's a tag. I never took off the shirt. I've had this shirt for like 2 years. The tag was a part of this.
Is that the hardest button to button?
No, it's not. It's kind of a penis shaped clip. You see that? Or like, oh. I guess it'd be a light bulb, but to me, I'm like, yeah, it's a cock. a little short cock.
Just gotta go with what you know.
I'm sorry. That's for you, Shane.
Quit throwing your tiny little
big shout out to that clip that's been a big fan of the show. It's always been on my shirt.
All right, guys. Well, I think we'll wrap this thing up.
Hey, big shout out to Charlie.
Oh, gosh. Big shout out to John playing bass all the time for me.
Yeah, get out of here for free. And big shout out. Big shout out to Shane Preston for having us on the show here.
Yeah, big shout out to Shane.
Yeah.
Dude, I totally hijacked his hosting.
Hey, thanks for the help.
Big shout out to John helping.
Yeah. No, this is cool, man.
Yeah, thanks for letting us be on your show.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that it happened this way.
Yeah. you want to play some tracks here at the end? We talked about a couple of things. What are you thinking?
Yeah, what's on that?
Because I did play last time I was on the show. I did play When I've Cried. Can I see?
You know, people love Maybe. Yeah. You could always say Maybe.
Let's do something. Maybe's good, but I think we should do, let's do something. Let's slap him in the face.
Sing Me a Dance, my favorite.
Like I do love your arrangement on it. Hold on, dude. Come on, you know I got. I love my bass part on Get You Girl.
We do Get You Girl.
What?
We do Get You Girl.
Get You Girl is a lot of fun. Oh, Ain't Gonna Worry too, because I get like the two in a row. I get to lead that one. Charlie, I only like the song from the big part of it.
I would vote Get You Girl over.
Let's do Get You Girl.
Yeah.
All right.
You're enjoying Get You Girl for our last studio album, The Educated Guest by The Educated Guest. Yeah. New album's coming out April 2016.
Yeah, the album available on Bandcamp.
If you're interested in the record, go to our Bandcamp. You can just go to theeducatedguest.com.
All you one can word. For free, right?
You can listen to the whole thing for free. You can pay $50 for the album.
Yeah, it's $9,000, but we send you a signed picture of my ass.
Yeah, you can pay as much as you want.
Just like, yeah, give us money. Come on, we're poor. Give us money.
We need your money.
Yeah. Give it, come on.
I bought my copy of Vintage Vinyl. So,
well, thank you, Shane. Cheers to that. Support right,
hey, there's another place. We'll cheers.
Yeah, Vintage Vinyl. Hey, big shout out to Vintage Vinyl. Big support of the show.
Yeah. Actually, they are.
No, I know. That was like the only non-ironic big shout out, because I was like, big shout out to Donald Trump, big support of the show. Big shout out to all Taoism. Like everybody that said, it's a Taoist is big.
Yeah, last record store day, Jim invited me down to DJ
store
day. So
yeah, Jim's a great dude.
Yeah,
I like him a lot.
Me and Kelsey McClure were there DJing and. Yeah, so it was fun. I'm hoping that I get invited back.
Yeah,
but I'm sure you will, dude.
It was cool. Like, I wish I could have like actually spun records since it's Vintage Vinyl.
Yeah,
but I, in order to, since I was invited as part of the show and cross promote everything, I made like just a mix CD of some of my favorites from the first year of the show, and I played all local music for my hour. And,
by the way, Shane, you are such a wonderful supporter of like everything local, and I've always dug that about you. That's awesome. Like, thank you for helping me to feel so like, you know, exactly. Like, felt like helping us like promote our music, helping me promote my, you know, self you know, serving comedy shows and stuff like that. Like, it really is a useful tool. So thank you, man.
Yeah, I'm glad I can help, man.
And helping me with the that coke addiction.
Exactly. And thanks for helping, yeah, holding Charlie's hair back when he was puking in the toilet from withdrawal.
In 93.
Yeah, from his crazy, crazy Dillard's catalog addiction. He had, like, this weird thing about the Dillard's catalog.
Yeah.
He's like, I gotta take the Dillard's catalog in my room. Charlie's weird like that.
Just gonna go sniff all the perfume meds.
What you didn't know is my hair is a wig. You could have just taken it off, but
Charlie kept the puff of the gas out of the Easy Cheese containers. Addicted to that. My strange addiction to Easy Cheese.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Thanks
for having us.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for hanging out.
So this track's gonna be Get You Girl?
Get You Girl.
Yeah, I'm gonna get you, girl.
Us girl.
Get our girl.
Follow the band on Facebook and Twitter.
Yep. T and Educated Guess on Twitter.
Yeah. Everything else
is it T underscore? Or is it just T Educated Guess?
Yeah.
Get you girl. Once again.
Follow John's Thursday night.
Yeah, Thursday night, Mike night.
Yeah.
It's just at John Fittigoni or at Fitz's bar, Fitz's balcony bar.
Yeah.
And every Thursday, man, 10 p.m. Come on through.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Girl.